As Florida's governor and the White House trade jabs, the nation's top educator says he's deeply concerned about the state's COVID-19 policies regarding schools.
The Biden administration is now getting involved in the ongoing fight here in Florida over masks for students.
This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. This hour, we welcome Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona to the show. What the federal government is saying over the fight over masks in Florida schools. Then later, a look at how the state's long-term care facilities are reacting to a new vaccine mandate for staff.
We've got a lot to talk about this week, and we want to hear from you statewide. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, hundreds of thousands of school children in Florida have to wear masks in public school classrooms. Four of the largest five districts in the state now have mandatory mask policies in place unless a child brings a doctor's note saying they have a medical reason for not wearing a mask.
The Florida Board of Education this week decided two school boards that approved the first mask policies violated state rules and laws. Earlier this month, Governor Ron DeSantis issued an executive order, and then two state agencies okayed rules regarding masks, requiring parents have the ability to opt out of any school mask rule. Now, we'll take your calls and read your tweets in a few minutes. Line them up now, though. 305-995-1800. Parents, teachers, students, we'd love to hear from you. 305-995-1800 or on Twitter at Florida Roundup.
Yeah, Tom, this fight has been intensifying for weeks between local school districts and the state. And now it's drawn the attention of the federal government. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden ordered his U.S. Education Secretary, Miguel Cardona, to take action against governors like Ron DeSantis who have banned mask mandates. We spoke with Secretary Cardona earlier today. Secretary Cardona, a pleasure to have you on the Florida Roundup. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
So what prompted you to send the open letter to Governor DeSantis and Florida Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran?
Student safety. This really boils down to student safety and making sure we're protecting our students and our staff. And we know last year when we reopened schools that it's really important for local school leaders and local health officials to be able to use everything that they can to keep children safe.
Now, you've pledged support for Florida school districts that are defying the governor on their virus mitigation strategies. You've even said funds from the American Rescue Plan could be used in this way. Can you explain how that might work?
Sure. My message to the education leaders was that we want to support them doing what they need to do to protect children. And the American Rescue Plan funds were distributed in March for that effort to make sure that we can safely reopen schools. And that was the intent from Congress and then the president. So we fully intend to support districts' use of funds to fully reopen schools, which includes having adequate staffing to get that done.
So would you then go around the state of Florida and directly distribute funds to individual Florida school districts?
You know, another concern that doesn't get a lot of attention is we distributed the funds in March, and districts should have these funds already. I don't understand what the delay is. We moved quickly to get the funds out the door as Congress intended. There's no reason the federal government should be holding on to money. We needed to get it into the classrooms, into the hands of educators so that they can make sure that their buildings are safe for reopening, make sure that they have adequate tools, make sure that class sizes are better, make sure that they have enough student support services available. That's what the money should be used for. So it is our expectation that states also don't hold off distributing the money and give access to the funds the way Congress intended.
And to be clear, the spokesperson for the governor has said that some of those funds have been distributed. Have you spoken with either the governor or the education commissioner, or has the open letter been the only communication?
No, I have spoken to Richard Corcoran maybe a week and a half ago, as I have with other commissioners throughout the country, and I have spoken to other governors. I did put in a call, but I was asked to speak to the commissioner, and it was a good conversation. I think we all agree, you know, vaccinations matter. We all want students in school. I think where we disagree is that the use of mitigation strategies to help prevent community spread will also help keep our schools open. And we're seeing that in communities across the country that are less likely to use mitigation strategies. We're seeing more community spread, and we know that leads to school closures.
President Biden has talked about potentially pursuing legal action against states like Florida that aren't following federal safety guidelines for students. What might that look like?
Well, you know, at this point, it's really about making sure students are able to access in-person learning. And we know that's how students learn best. And we know that's our collective goal across the country. And what we're finding is when communities are not following the recommended guidelines to reduce transmission, we're seeing students are not, parents and students are not feeling comfortable going into the schools because they feel they're being put at risk. This is especially the case for students that have pre-existing conditions or have students with disabilities, for example, that really need to be in-person learning when that option is available. But because of some of the policies, we're wondering what level of barriers are being created for these families and these students based on poor policy that's not following CDC guidance around how to protect students.
So then what legal options are at your disposal? What can you do, for example, to ensure that the money that has not yet gone to districts will get to districts? What are some of the other ways the federal government could change the situation on the ground here in Florida?
Right. Well, you know, we want to make sure that we're using everything in our toolbox at the Department of Education to support students, to support families in their interest in sending their students to school in person. Every student should have that opportunity. We know what works. And if we receive complaints that students' rights are being violated by not having access to a safe learning environment, we're going to investigate those cases. So the Office for Civil Rights is aware that there may be complaints and cases brought against districts that whose parents feel or district officials feel are not able to provide a safe environment for their children. So that's one of the things. We want to make sure that the American Rescue Plan funds that states have is eligible for use the way the district leaders feel it's best used. And that includes providing protective measures for students and staff, but also fully staffing a district and making sure that the districts are whole. And that includes having a superintendent and educators to lead the district.
Will the Department of Education take other measures like calling for a mask requirement for all public schools, at telling Florida school districts to start offering options for live virtual class again, like we had last year? Will you get involved in that way?
You know, we understand the limited role the federal government has in requiring mandates for whether it's masks or vaccines. And that really isn't something that we're trying to do. We respect local control. We respect local control. What we're seeing in some places across the country is that local control is being taken away by state governments. And that goes against not only local control, but that goes against what we know works for students. So we're trying not to overextend our reach, but what we're finding is where there's an overextension of reach is putting students in harm's way. And that's the case in Florida. So what we want to do is continue to work with Florida. Listen, you know, the best way to get through this is to work together to make sure we're keeping our students at the center of the conversation, not making this about politics. And, you know, we should be talking about how to help our students who have had disrupted learning in many cases, or who have experienced loss in their community. How do we support our students? That's what we should be talking about. The Department of Education at the federal level wants to support Florida, Texas, and every other state in their efforts to support students. And we work, I think it'll be better for our students if we work together on this. What we're trying to get across here is that local communities know what's best for their students, know what's best for their educators, and they have to be empowered to make those decisions. That's what worked across the country last year. And I know it can work in Florida as well.
And again, just to be clear, what I hear you saying is that you're trying to come to terms with Florida. I haven't heard you say yet how specifically school districts might get the federal monies you're talking about.
Right.
Or what you might do legally to force Florida to institute the kinds of safety protocols that public health officials say are best. Is that right?
Well, I think I made that clear already. The American Rescue Plan funds should be used. Our Office of Elementary and Secondary Education oversee the implementation of those grants. Every state has to put in a plan on how they're going to be using the funds and to get the last third of the funds. Florida has yet, as of maybe a week and a half ago, hasn't submitted their application of how they're planning on using the other funds. So we want to make sure that if they're not utilizing their funds to give it to the districts, we get that money to the districts. That's number one. So that's a very specific answer to that question. Number two, our Office for Civil Rights is prepared to take on any investigation necessary to support the safe reentry into schools if allegations that students' rights to a free and appropriate public education are being violated. So those are very specific, concrete things that we can do at the Department of Education to support the students and families of Florida.
Secretary Cardona, thank you so much for appearing with us here on the Florida Roundup.
Glad to be with you. Thank you.
305-995-1800, our phone number across the state here on this Friday afternoon. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Michael is joining us in Boynton Beach in South Florida. Michael, thanks for your call. You're on the program. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm a psychologist in Boynton Beach. And related to the mask mandates, I think that what we're going to be doing, this is all from a psychological point of view and certainly not from a political point of view, that we're going to be passing on the very same conflict that the parents have to our children in terms of who wears a mask and who doesn't. There's going to be bullies at school. There's going to be people's other children and teenagers saying to another child, my mommy and daddy said I didn't have to wear a mask. You don't have to wear a mask. Why are you wearing a mask? And we're going to, and these children are ill-equipped to deal with it. The other kids who are going to give into this are simply going to take their mask off during the day. There's nobody identifying for these children whose parents should or should not have told them to wear a mask, and they'll just put it back on before they go home.
Michael, what's your recommendation then for parents this weekend who may be talking to their children who've already gone to school, or children here in Florida who are preparing for that first day of school in the week ahead?
I think that they should be prepared for this conflict to come up in very specific terms, should teach their children exactly what to say. And that is, we are doing this for the protection of each other. We're doing this for the protection of ourselves and our families. So therefore, that's why I'm going to do it.
And Michael,
but they need to teach them specifics.
Appreciate you lending your voice there. Michael, a psychologist in Boynton Beach here on the Florida Roundup. Jeff Solacek is with us now, education reporter at the Tampa Bay Times. Jeff, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, lots of conflict here, obviously, in kitchens and living rooms and schoolhouses and classrooms here. Let's talk about this at the agency level. The Florida Education Commissioner, Richard Corcoran, had threatened to withhold state money from school boards that pass a mask mandate, despite the governor issuing an executive order banning those requirements. Ana Ceballos, a colleague of ours here in the news media in Florida, she's with the Miami Herald, reports today that Commissioner Corcoran has announced he'll do just that against Broward and Alachua public schools. How much money could be at risk?
Well, in Alachua County, we're looking at school board members making about $38,000 a year. So if you look at them, around $300,000 out of their $537 odd million budget, And in Broward, if you look at all the board members together, we're looking at somewhere in that $600,000-$700,000 range out of their $2.6 billion budget.
And these are the salary withholding the threat that the education commissioner issued. And we also heard from the federal government after that threat that they're willing to kind of make up that difference.
Yes. Right now, I just read through the order. Anna and I were talking about that. And what it says is that they're going to take away every month about 1/12 of the salary mm-hmm. for each of those board members who voted to impose this mask mandate until they change their orders. They have 48 hours to comply or say they're not going to comply. And it's very clear in that order that they need to take that money from the board salaries and nothing else. The federal government has said that they want to back it up. In Alachua County, the county commissioners actually said that they would help support the Alachua County School Board because they support them so much.
The focus here initially on Broward and Alachua public schools, because those are the two public school boards that moved first to have the mask mandates in place. But a number of other counties, a number of other school boards have followed suit this week, including Hillsborough County. 10 days or so into that school year, tell us, how goes it?
Well, they have a number of quarantines and virus cases that are so high that when Miami-Dade was discussing their potential mask mandate, which they did impose, they referred to Hillsborough as the ground zero, that they did not want to have the same type of numbers. So it's not looking good from that front. They're talking about their concerns about being able to run the schools well if they have so many people out. As far as being in the schools, I haven't been inside them, so I can't tell you if they're wearing masks, what they're doing there. We hear that it's sporadic. It's not as great as it could be. And officials keep saying, please wear these masks and follow these rules.
Meantime, a second front on this fight over mask policies is playing out in state court. A trial begins next week with a group of parents challenging the state's ban on mask mandates in schools. What do we expect to hear?
Well, from the plaintiffs who won the ability to have this case, they will be arguing that the schools are not safe and that if they cannot mandate masks, they are asking for the judge to rule that the governor has no authority and the Department of Health have no authority to put this mask mandate ban in place. They will make a bunch of arguments about everything from whether they have a right to bring that case up to whether there was even an emergency mm-hmm. that led into the ability to have that emergency order. And the state, on the other hand, will say the courts have no ability to wade into this policy argument. This is something that is the purview of the legislature and the executive. And these parents and students should not be rightly bringing this case. This is just not appropriate to be heard in the courts.
Another front to watch, to report on, and we'll be reading along with you. Jeff, thanks for sharing your reporting with us here on the Roundup.
Thank you.
Jeff Solacek, education reporter at the Tampa Bay Times.
Lots of calls, 305-995-1800. Melanie in Vieira Beach. Hi, Melanie, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, Melanie, I'm from Vieira, not Vieira Beach, just to clarify.
And thanks for that.
No problem. So I am calling. I'm retired. I don't have children in the school system now, but I'm an educator. I was in higher education, and I'm just appalled at the decision-making that our governor is making. And this is somebody who I thought at the beginning did a very good job. I just think that this should be a home rule decision. I've called the governor's office and expressed my opinion, and this just doesn't make sense. We're putting children at risk. We're putting our community at risk. I noticed a few days ago that someone who lived across the street from me, one of their eighth grader was home. And, you know, when we asked about it, it's because his class is quarantined. It's not just happening there. It's happening everywhere. So I think this is something that we should be able to decide within our own community. I don't understand why it's so contentious. It's just extremely frustrating to me.
Contentious it has certainly been, Melanie, and I want to thank you for the call. We're going to take a few more calls after the break. If you're just tuning in, this is the Florida Roundup. We just heard from the U.S. Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, saying that he may use the federal government's Office of Civil Rights to investigate cases in Florida where the White House feels that student safety is not being guaranteed. We're going to take more calls and tweets in a moment. Get on the line now, 305-995-1800. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about masks and schools again this week here in Florida. It is certainly a hot topic as school children have been back in classrooms in many areas in Florida and beginning to continue to return to school in the week ahead. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or at Florida Roundup is on our Twitter feed. Mara in Miami, we wanted to hear from you. Thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Yes, I'm listening to the podcast, and my point is, like, I feel like you're all coming from the same, with the same goal, which is to keep the kids and the school teachers and the staff safe. We all want that. My point is, we have peer reviews that are asserting that masks do work, and we have peer reviews that are asserting that masks are not doing what needs to do. And we also need to get into account the side effects in terms of emotional, you know, harm that this could cause. So my point is, I keep listening that we need to have an open conversation, but the open conversation to me looks like this. We're going to have a specialist with the facts asserting and explain to us why masks work, debating with someone that is asserting that masks do work, specialists that can talk about us and educate us. I don't see this conversation. I think we're wasting our time putting the energy in something, in places that are not where it needs to be done. We need to talk openly and have a discussion and, you know, just to educate ourselves. I think we all deserve this. I guess we're seeing that people are tired of sitting on one side of, and we need to really put more attention in bringing the two sides to the table and have a conversation. Show me the data where you are asserting that masks must work. And I would like to see your data explaining why masks doesn't work.
Yeah. Because well, Mara, I do know in South Florida, for instance, where there are medical advisory task force that have been convened, particularly by the Miami-Dade County School District, that have provided just that data to the school board and have used that data to make the recommendations that they made earlier this week and that the school board, the majority of the school board members, followed through with when they approved the mask policy in Miami-Dade County, which is a requirement with a doctor's note for an exemption. But we do appreciate that conversation, and absolutely that conversation is important, and the balance between the physical health and the physical risk and the mental health of children and teachers is an important part of this conversation, as is, of course, nursing homes, which in Florida were an early focus of intervention with this virus. And Melissa, Governor Ron DeSantis says requiring nursing home workers to be vaccinated against COVID-19 could affect staffing levels in these long-term care facilities here in the Sunshine State. And all this comes after the Biden administration on Wednesday announced a vaccine mandate for medical staff in nursing homes nationwide that rely on Medicaid and Medicare funding. The governor here in Florida called that requirement a, quote, massive hammer.
They're already short-staffed, and there's a lot of people that feel strongly against being mandated, that they think it should be something that they choose, and they may have reasons why they make different choices.
Now, Florida nursing homes have the second lowest percentage of vaccinated workers in the country. Data shows that was the case during a four-week period in June and July. Keep those calls coming, 305-995-1800, and tweets to Florida Roundup as we welcome Mary Daniel, formerly with the Task Force on the Safe and Limited Reopening of Long-Term Care Facilities. Hi, Mary.
Hello there.
Good to have you. And with us as well, Mari Mizrahi, the CEO at River Garden Hebrew Home for the Aged in Jacksonville. Mari, good to have you.
Hi, great to be here.
And let me begin with you, Mary Daniels, since you served on a statewide task force around long-term care facilities. What's your reaction to the vaccine mandate on this for staff in these facilities from the White House?
As much as I have supported the governor and what he has done in opening the doors to get us back in to see our loved ones after being locked out for so many months, I have always been a proponent of getting the staff vaccinated. The fact is that the virus is getting into these facilities and did get into these facilities during the lockdown from the staff. And I personally believe, although I 100% agree that the staffing issues are real and it is something that the industry has to address and has to come up with a solution for, I also believe that if these workers feel that this is their life's work, and many of them do, caring for the disabled and caring for the elderly, I feel that when you're in an inpatient setting with these residents, that it is crucial that you get vaccinated.
And of course, many know that you have a very compelling personal story about this. You were separated from your husband and even took a job in his long-term care facility so you could see him during the lockdown. So did it bother you at all when you were doing that, that you knew that so many of the staff were unvaccinated, that the vaccination rates are so low?
At the time that I was in there last summer, we did not have the vaccine, but I could see as an employee in the facility that—
Thank you for correcting me on that. Yeah, thank you for that. Go ahead.
No, I could see, however, that these workers, let me just say, I am in full support of them in the sense that they are working very hard. They have worked very hard during this pandemic. They are overworked. They are underpaid. That is a very real fact. And that's part of the problem in this industry. But they are fatigued. And so I saw people not wearing masks. I see it today. I see people in my husband's facility not wearing masks, staff I'm talking about. And I know that at least half of them are not vaccinated. And that's a problem. They are putting these patients at risk. My husband is vaccinated, so I'm not overly concerned, to be real honest, in terms of it killing him, but I am concerned that he could become sick. And we do have more cases in our facility today than we have had the entire time of the pandemic. We have to take this seriously, and we have to stop punishing the people that are in these facilities for things that they have no control over, and that is other people bringing the virus into them.
Mari Mizrahi, CEO of River Garden in Jacksonville, how will your center respond to the mandate?
Well, thank you, Melissa. We actually were ahead of the mandate. We didn't wait for the federal government or the state government to mandate vaccine. We have already made it a condition of employment beginning October 1st, and we have not hired any new staff since July 19th that is not already vaccinated or agrees to be vaccinated upon starting their job. We went ahead and did this because it's the right thing to do. So we are already well on our way to a very high vaccination rate. Yesterday, I did get an update that 92% of our staff are vaccinated, and we have well over 95% of our residents are vaccinated. I do agree that vaccination is important. It is necessary to end the pandemic, as well as wearing masks, washing hands, and keeping those physical distancing. I agree with Mary that virus is coming into nursing homes in our area. We are experiencing that too because of the high community positivity rate here in the Jacksonville area. It is very difficult to keep it out when it is so prevalent in the community. But I will tell you, with our staff who have come positive for COVID-19 and our residents as well, they have been vaccinated, and the majority have been vaccinated. And the difference between last summer and this summer is they haven't been sick. And that is 100% because of the vaccine.
Well, what about the governor's comment that this will make it harder for nursing homes and long-term care facilities to keep staff? Are you finding that or not?
We are not experiencing that, but yes, I think some places may. We started with an education campaign and really working on making sure people understood how important vaccine is and understood how it works. We've been doing this for a long, long, long time, and I'm sure many others have too. Look, the workforce is tired. I agree with Mary as well. They're fatigued. They've been on the front lines for the last 18 months. They've been giving of themselves at work. They have been careful outside of work. They have done all that they can to care for these residents. And honestly, I have had many personal conversations with people who've been hesitant to take the vaccine because that's been part of our campaign to get our employees vaccinated. And, you know, the people who are, or at least left at River Garden, they have real reasons why they won't or can't do it. They absolutely understand the importance of being vaccinated and understand River Garden's position on wanting the staff to be vaccinated in order to protect the residents, to protect the staff, and to protect the families. A lot of people's decisions are personal. And so I do think that it will potentially affect the staffing numbers if people's personal decisions affect whether they want to continue in healthcare. And we are seeing a lot of people leaving healthcare because there are many jobs out there that, you know, that are more enticing right now. And you don't have to feel like you're going to, you know, risk your life going to work or work incredibly hard.
Mari, Mary, stick with us here on the Florida Roundup talking about vaccines for nursing home and long-term care facility workers that that are working in facilities that accept Medicaid and Medicare payments for their services. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Rita is in Fort Lauderdale. Rita, thanks for calling. You're on the radio. Rita, are you with us? I think we may have lost Rita there, but hopefully we'll be able to connect with her in a moment. Mari, I wanted to ask you, as you instituted your vaccine policies there at River Garden Hebrew Home for the Aged in Jacksonville, what are some of the lessons for public schools from your experience in running a nursing home, do you think?
Well, I would say we're similar in that we have people together in community, you know, eating together, participating together, doing activities together, visiting together. And that's very similar to the school environment. And I will tell you that before we had vaccine, the infection control principles that we were required to use are the three basics, which is wearing masks, good hand hygiene, washing hands frequently and correctly, and that physical distancing. And for schools, especially for school-aged children who are not old enough to be vaccinated, I would expect that they will be following those same infection control principles. I mean, we're all people. We're either children or we're adults.
Indeed. One or the other. That is true, Mari. It is the Florida Roundup here from Florida Public Radio.
305-995-1800. Hans calling from Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Hans, happy Friday. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hey, Hans, you're on the radio. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my point is it is amazing and very irresponsible for a governor who does not have a medical degree, a medical license or anything to mandate people shouldn't wear a mask. That's very irresponsible. That puts millions of people at risk, and somebody with a medical degree, those other people should make a decision, and they do on their advice. My daughter was a doctor at the first COVID case in New York in the hospital. And everybody is wearing masks up to today. They wear some goggles sometimes even, and even a shield. So it is, again, it amazes me that this happened in this country, because it's also a matter of intelligence. And this is no reason to be stubborn and tell people the wrong thing to do.
Thanks, Hans. Yep. You know, Mary Daniel, formerly with the task force on reopening the state's long-term care facilities, the governor has cited data in his decision-making. That said, he's actually been deplatformed from YouTube for putting up forums that spread misinformation about the vaccine and how best to mitigate the spread of the virus. Some of his advisors are not epidemiologists or virologists. They don't have subject matter expertise in all of this. What about the perception among some Florida residents out there that the governor is not making sound medical decisions for the majority of the state's residents?
Well, I understand that obviously this has become such a huge controversial divided issue. And I believe that that's really part of the problem. We can't trust, and I'm not speaking specifically about Governor DeSantis when I say that we cannot trust our government to provide us with factual information. This has become a my side, their side battle. And I think that's one of the reasons that you're seeing so many people decide not to get the vaccine. They don't know the truth. I don't know the truth. None of us know the truth. And that's a real problem.
What do you mean you don't know the truth? Yeah, I mean, you got vaccinated, right? You believe the science on that?
Well, but there's just as many people there are people that have science on both sides. There is science on both sides that says to do it this way or to do it that way. There's no question about that. I talk to a lot of different people, and this is a very heated topic that we really see a lot of in our Facebook group, our Caregivers for Compromise Facebook group. And the truth of the matter is that none of us know the truth because we're being fed information from our perspective sides that is tainting what our truth is. And if we all don't realize that, the issue here is that we cannot trust the information that we're getting as being accurate because politics is involved in this mess. And to me, that is one of the most disappointing parts about it, that whatever Governor DeSantis says, there are people that are going to discredit it because it's coming from Governor DeSantis. And that's a real problem. I happen to trust him. He listened to me when I needed to get to my husband. And I got the vaccine. I can do both. I can trust him and believe that he is doing everything in his power to make this right. I certainly don't believe he's trying to harm people. I don't think anybody's trying to harm people. But everybody's fighting so hard for their side that we're not all coming together and learning about this together and making good decisions together.
Mary, we've got to leave it there. Appreciate that comment. Mary Daniel, former task force on the safe and limited reopening of long-term care facilities member here in Florida. Mari Mizrahi is the CEO of River Garden Hebrew Home for the Aged in Jacksonville. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, at least seven new sites opened around the state this week offering an experimental therapy to treat COVID-19. These sites offer what's known as monoclonal antibody therapy treatment. It was used by former President Trump when he was infected with the virus.
Governor DeSantis has crisscrossed the state announcing these sites. Some are located in senior centers. Some are in parks. The site in Jacksonville that opened this week is in a downtown public library. And a photo that has made the rounds on social media showed patients lying on the library carpet waiting at least 2 hours to be seen.
Now, the governor has called the monoclonal antibody treatment, also known as Regeneron, life-saving. Most patients at these sites in Florida don't have to pay for the medicine. It does cost about $2,000 a dose. Federal taxpayers are picking up the tab. Meanwhile, the pace of people getting vaccinated in Florida has been tapering. Critics of the governor's big push around Regeneron say he should be more aggressively promoting vaccination and masks to prevent people from getting sick in the first place. Give us a call, Florida, as we talk about this. 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup.
A.G. Gankarski is back with us here on the Roundup. A.G. writes for Florida Politics. Nice to have you back, sir.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you.
How is the governor do you think, balancing this talk and this crisscrossing of the state regarding these this therapy, this Regeneron therapy, and his talk about vaccinations?
Well, he's struggling to get the message that satisfies everybody. He keeps recalibrating. Today he went to Bonita Springs, launching another monoclonal site, and he talked about the vaccination push that he made earlier this year, the seniors first thing, all of that. And he's talked about vaccinations, saying that the state is the most vaccinated in the Southeast region, that the 50 and over cohort is 80% vaccinated. And he said that, people who want vaccines know where to get them. What he's saying about the monoclonal sites is that people are less aware of that therapy. So the last couple of weeks has been going around the state and opening these sites. It hasn't gone without a hitch, as we know.
Yeah.
But that's been the strategy. And he's been talking about vaccines at those openings pretty consistently.
What strikes you about this strategy, about where some of these monoclonal therapy sites are opening, and how fast the governor has been flying across the state, corner to corner, peninsula to panhandle this week, announcing these sites?
Yeah, I mean, he's hit a couple markets today. He's doing a couple markets today, for example. And his goal, as he said when he was talking this morning, is that he wants it to be drivable. He wants it to be to where people in any part of the state can get in the car and drive and get this therapy if they need it. He's obviously aware of the pressure on the hospitals. He and his administration keep saying that the state has peaked in its surge, and the summer season of COVID is about over, so things should get easier. But he sees this as a supplemental therapy. He says get vaccines on the front end, get the monoclonal on the back end. It doesn't work quite that cleanly, as we know. A lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of people are not getting vaccines, but that's his rhetoric.
Well, and on this particular therapy, the research has shown that those who receive it very quickly after a diagnosis are those that fare the best. And as we saw in this social media photograph out of Jacksonville, the library, the wait time and the facilities themselves are not medical facilities. These are senior centers, parks, and in the library case, a public library that has been deemed the location for this medical therapy.
Yeah, and that's actually a separate conference room in the library. It's a fairly big main library in downtown Jacksonville, and it's typically has its own separate entrance and all of that. But yeah, these are non-traditional facilities, and that reflects the pressure on the healthcare system itself. You've got ERs with 12-hour, 24-hour waits for random things. Then you've got to think of these other locations. I think the library rollout in Jacksonville was problematic because they didn't have enough chairs. So you've got people lying on this well-trafficked floor in this public library in downtown Jacksonville for hours at a time, face down in this carpet. And as anybody who knows anything about these libraries knows, you do not want to be face down in that carpet.
Yeah.
It's a very bad optic. And this is something that the governor's team is pushing back on even today. They're saying the lady has gotten better at Regeneron. They're pointing to her story as a success story. But, that's the enduring power of the image. This image is from, a couple days ago, and the governor's team is still doing damage control on Friday afternoon. That illustrates the problem, or one of the problems of this rollout. Another problem, obviously, has been referred to in an AP story, regarding, a donor being linked to Regeneron. That was something the governor's team pushed back on all week. And you have to wonder how many of these wounds that the governor's team has are entirely self-imposed, but that's a subject for another segment.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Marshall on the line in Miami. Hi, Marshall.
Hey,
go right ahead. All right.
Listen, I have two comments. As far as the masks in the schools are concerned, I think you need to depoliticize the entire mechanism for making this decision. It really amplifies what one of the female callers from a few minutes ago said, that you just have to have the governor's office place their highest respected scientists in a town hall setting saying why we do not need masks, and have some psychiatrists in there too from the governor's office on how that's deleterious to students' health and welfare. And then on the other side, you have to have the scientists that are the proponents for the efficacy of masks in school, and psychiatrists, which will talk about the benefit of wearing a mask versus getting COVID or being at risk for COVID. And I think you have to have that in a town hall setting where you have equal Republicans and Democrats and independents that are stakeholders, mainly parents of students, so that school-age kids, so they're able to, you know, weigh in and ask intelligent questions in a
I'll tell you, Marshall, there have been innumerable town halls on this. The governor has put together town halls, but the advisors that he has chosen are not, they're not, a lot of them are, frankly, they're just not credible. They don't have expertise in this. But that said, what are your thoughts about Regeneron?
Regeneron, as far as I know, is that's similar to the monoclonal antibodies, which is the Remdesivir as well?
Right, monoclonal antibodies. Yep.
Yeah, so how many peer-to-peer tests have been done there? And typically, if you don't want to get if your reason for not wanting to get a shot is because you don't like the amount of testing that's done, there hasn't been enough testing for the negative side effects, my guess is that these monoclonal antibodies, the testing for them is probably not nearly as robust as it is for the shots. And if you are getting antibodies in a library setting, my guess is if you have an adverse effect, I don't know where the nearest medical professional is that's going to be able to save your life in that instance.
Marshall, lots of great points from you. A.G. Gankarski, this therapy does help people. Let's be clear on that. If you are starting to get sick with COVID, it will help you, according to a pretty good amount of data. That said, it's expensive. It's hard to know if you're in the right stage of the disease to take the therapy. And, you know, the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, I think applies. It's easier to mask up and get the vaccine than it is to go get this therapy.
Yeah, and, you know, but this is something the governor would say, too, that you want to have both options there as tools in the toolbox. I mean, that's the old cliche. Mm-hmm. And the governor, when he's gone around and promoted these clinics, he says you have to have early detection. If you wait too late, it doesn't work. You have to do it early. And this has been pretty consistent in his message. And, you know, regarding Regeneron, I mean, yeah, there's not as much known about as you would want, but that's true with a lot of the treatment modalities in this virus. I mean, this is an evolving virus, and, you know,
that's what's fascinating to me is that this is an experimental treatment and people are willing to go get that, but they're not willing to go get a vaccine because they're concerned it's too experimental, even though the mRNA mechanism behind that have been researched for decades.
Right. And a lot of that comes down, you know, to Mary Daniels talking about that just a little bit ago, the politics of it all, you know, the overheated rhetoric on all sides, the Facebook memes, you know, and people don't know what to trust. So that often paralyzes them. And with this Regeneron, I mean, when you've got ERs that are as crammed as Florida's had for week after week, and you've got something where you can take a few hundred people out of those ERs and give them a different type of treatment. Yeah, there is risk. Yeah, there are potential bad optics. Yeah, their launch hasn't been perfect. But this is a treatment modality that the governor is pushing for a reason. And I think at its heart, it's a public health reason. You know, that said, I think the administration's messaging has been catastrophic. And that's why we keep discussing whether the governor means well or not.
You know, it's really been extraordinary this week. We've been covering this for over a year now, but I think in Jacksonville in particular, AG, where we did have the photo from our local library catch so many eyeballs. This is really, we're in a new phase now, I guess, of a very long era we're living through. But I want to thank you so much. It's always great to get your insights about statewide politics. AG Gankarski of Florida Politics, thanks.
Thank you.
And Tom, as we wrap up another week. Man, are we looking forward to the weekend. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Andrea Podermo and Heather Schatz are the show producers.
Indeed. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations and our Technical Director is Peter Meritz. We get engineering help each and every week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Leslie Ovalle answered the phones this hour. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Have a great weekend and a safe weekend. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon.